We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
San Francisco skyline. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome back. Last hour, we were talking about Guy Fieri's $700 Players Super Bowl tailgate for the very well-heeled who want to rub shoulders with the football elite. $700, the Guy Fieri tailgate has a super steak sandwich station, a whole hog throwdown. What is it? A whole hog throwdown. Isn't that what goes on Q102? Like 10 throws in a row? Isn't that a whole hog throwdown? Just get Mia Moore in here and doctor, see if she thinks Guy Fieri's ripping her off.
Seriously.
Low country jambalaya, because when I'm in the Bay Area, it's low country jambalaya, right? I mean, when aren't we up to our eyeballs in gumbo and jambalaya here in the Bay Area, right?
I know. It's just so strange. There's nothing that kind of says San Francisco. I mean, I know it's Santa Clara. Yes, I get
right.
It. But.
Well, that's so I have to read this to you because, well, hey, idiots. That's you and me.
Oh, okay.
That's
you
and
you.
Me. That's you and me. They're not in Frisco. Do you think they use the right spelling of there?
Yeah, of course not.
Do you think that's a T-H-Y apostrophe R-E or a T-H-E-R-E?
That's funny.
Also, never say Frisco.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Number one.
Yeah, by the way, you're not from Frisco either, apparently.
Right.
Because no, yeah, thank you.
Shame. Shame.
Yeah, if you ever met St. Francis, you wouldn't be like, what's up, Frank?
No.
Don't call it Frisco. The Super Bowl's in Santa Clara, 40 miles from San Francisco. Who cares if there's no clam chowder? Well, okay. See how many establishing shots of Santa Clara you get.
Exactly. We will see the Golden Gate Bridge, the Bay Bridge, Coit Tower, guaranteed Alcatraz.
Fisherman's Wharf.
Absolutely.
So the entire thing will be pretending, like the Niners do, that it's in San Francisco.
And I'm pretty sure the NFL says Super Bowl 50 is in San Francisco. They don't even reference Santa Clara. So they should have a little bit of something that references it at this party. I'm just saying that's how I would have done it if I was planning it.
When we were at the Super Bowl in New Orleans, there was a chef in there making po' boys and handing out bowls of jambalaya
and
etouffee and crawfish. I mean, it was delicious. It was great. And it all made sense because we were in New Orleans.
Right?
Bang, bang. Chicken and shrimp.
Why there is a jambalaya station at Super Bowl 50? I don't know why. I really don't know why. So, $700, a live nacho bar.
A live nacho bar.
What are they going to do? Put a nacho bar on the back of a horse and then whip it and you got to chase the thing around running after it? By the way, somebody here on the text line says, basically, Guy Fieri's menu sounds like an entire year of your minor league baseball fried food segments.
That's pretty good.
It really does. It really does. Are they serving like bacon churros?
Ew. Actually, that
sounds pretty good.
That might be good.
I'm not
gonna lie, like,
That may be good. But yeah, what was the thing that disgusted you? Oh, the fried chicken waffle cone.
Yeah.
The fried chicken waffle cone scared Gianna. So there you go. If you got $700 on you and don't want to just buy frozen food from Costco,
I'm going to skip that one.
Skip that one and skip the whole thing. How about that? So here's the deal, Raiders fans. I know that if you listen to the show, the day it started a couple years ago, you thought I was a Raider hater. Nothing. No two words put together makes you sound dumber. I'm not. And if the last couple weeks haven't demonstrated that, if the coverage of this team this year hasn't demonstrated that, if my commitment to having the Raiders stay in Oakland by any means necessary, I mean, I don't care if it's because they wanted to stay or wanted to leave but weren't invited to leave, like whatever leaves the Raiders here, I'll be cool with it. And I won't go revisionist history. I won't say, oh, well, they're only still here because they're terrible and no one wants them. Like, that would be great with me. That would be super duper. However they stay here is cool with me. And I'm really rooting for the Rams to be LA's team. And I got a lot of friends in St. Louis who, if they are listening to this, are probably not too happy with me right now. But here's the deal. The Rams really are LA's football team. They've been playing. The Los Angeles Rams started in 1946. Heaven can wait. Warren Beatty, he was a Los Angeles Ram. That's the football team from L.A. And I'll tell you, Stan Kroenke seems hell-bent on moving. And he's got more money and influence than anyone else trying to relocate. He's put together a better stadium idea. He's got a better pitch. And he has absolutely destroyed his relationship with St. Louis. You know, you want an L.A. team, you're considering two, but the only reason why you're considering two is just to solve one of the other currently existing California stadium issues. Look, man, look. It's real simple. And we've got the 49ers proving what I'm about to say to you right here. Let Oakland and San Diego stay right where they are in their crappy stadiums. It's better than playing somewhere else in something new. Maybe it's not better to the bottom line. Maybe it's not better to the overall arc of your franchise's billion-dollar valuation. But staying right where the Raiders are right now, in my mind, is the absolute best thing for the Raiders. You don't want to be the city, or you don't want to be the team who looks like they're just, you know, you want to be in two places at once. Stay where you are. And unlike the 49ers, who took their ball and went somewhere they shouldn't have in the first place, a little more patience, maybe the only thing needed here. And that's ridiculous, because this has been a forever in a day issue. This has been the slowest moving pendulum swing of all time. The Raiders can't get their act together to help themselves. The city of Oakland can't get its act together to put together a brain trust that isn't going into public money, but using private money to solve this community issue. I mean, I think that Mayor Libby Schaaf should be applauded a little bit for not just bowing to the pressure of the NFL saying, well, you got to pay for all this. No, she shouldn't have to. City shouldn't have to. They shouldn't be held hostage by these teams. But I do think you need to create an atmosphere of cooperation. And it needs to be less adversarial over there. The Oakland Raiders will forever feel more like the Raiders playing in that dump that is the Coliseum and then in some sparkling new palace in Los Angeles. And if you were there for the rainy final game that Charles Woodson played in, I mean, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That atmosphere will never, ever be in L.A. I'm not saying they won't get loud. I'm not saying they won't get excited. I'm not saying that there aren't Raider fans in L.A. Of course there are. But there's just something different about right there. And I want them to stay right there. You look at the way that Stan Kroenke just napalmed what's going on in St. Louis. We've been talking about this. Have you heard the details? I mean, this is really something else. You're not going to believe this. Will Leach of Sports on Earth wrote, Kroenke argued in his relocation papers that St. Louis is essentially a dead city and no one should ever play football there again. He says that San Diego and Oakland are, quote, significantly more attractive markets than St. Louis. This is sort of like a man trying to win a lover's hand by claiming that her other suitors should be happy with the girlfriends they already have. He compared all other cities doing better to St. Louis, and he only positioned St. Louis as struggling. He basically called St. Louis Ferguson on steroids. St. Louis lags and will continue to lag far behind in the economic drivers that are necessary for sustained success of an NFL franchise. And then he gets really mean. If the NFL lets the Rams go to Los Angeles, the St. Louis stadium plan, which, to repeat, is the only one on the table, is still meant to bring in some other NFL team, right? So, like, even if they lose the Rams, St. Louis still wants to be an NFL city. And unlike the two cities in California that will not give you any money, they've already approved $400 million to get it done. There is no city who showed up with as vivid a real plan to build a new stadium now than St. Louis did. And this is where Kroenke just kills them in his relocation. He just torched and burned this thing. He says any club that signs on to this proposal in St. Louis will be well on the road to financial ruin, and the league will be harmed. That's not a negotiating tactic. That's an atomic bomb. He just basically said, not only do I want to leave St. Louis, but the NFL should never come back to this poor one-horse town ever again. And if you do, you are on the road to financial ruin and will destroy the overall value of the entire league. So not only is he, I mean, this is scorched earth.
Ouch.
This is scorched earth. So I'm going to tell you right now that the Rams are moving into Kroenke's building. That's going to be the one. It's going to be Inglewood. It's going to be Kroenke in Inglewood. Rams in L.A. That's my bet. Will the Raiders or the Chargers join him? Ah, man. That's where things are going to get interesting. But I think it's going to be Kroenke. And by the way, Kroenke's proposal, other than destroying St. Louis, looks pretty damn good. I don't know how the NFL would pass this up. So we'll have a little bit more on that in just a second. When we come on back, we're going to clear the call board. If you are on hold, 888-957-9570, that's the number. We're going to get to you before Tom Verducci joins us at 4:30, talking about the Hall of Fame vote. A lot of Major League Baseball coming up here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
All right. Let's go to Greg in Corte Madera. Thank you very much. Greg's been waiting patiently. What do you got for us this afternoon?
Hi, you guys. I just want to say hi, Damon, and hi, Gianna. I really like your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I've always been a big Gordon Ramsay guy myself. I didn't know too much about Guy Fieri until he got his Lamborghini ripped off. You know?
Yeah, I remember that. He had like an orange or yellow Lamborghini stolen. I drive right past that place every day driving to work. So
yeah, on Van Ness Street.
And yeah,
some 15-year-old kid did a Hudson Hawk and busted through the skylight and ripped off the but whatever. But
he did. He rappelled and took a Lamborghini out of there. That's ballsy. Yeah. You got to kind of admire it a little, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Hey, man, I was wondering what you thought about, you know, what about Tom Rathman being promoted? I know he's never done any head coaching himself.
Yeah, I mean, no. Let's not repeat any mistakes where the guy who isn't ready for the promotion gets the promotion. Sula, you know, I mean, please.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the day for experimenting with ideas and trying to go for the emotional in-house guys love him higher. Those days have passed, man. It's time to go get a guy who knows what he's doing.
All right. I was just thinking he's a badass for sure. He's won two Super Bowls and he just has that fiery attitude that Harbaugh had.
Here's the deal. Rathman's probably the one guy that the next coach is going to get stuck with no matter what. You know, you can pick your staff, but Rathman's staying. And if you're the next head coach, you probably say, all right, well, it's the Niners, and I get that. I understand why. And look at their running game. I thought that, you know, DeJuan Harris and Sean Drone, these guys actually two of the better players of the year. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
He stays. Thank you, Greg. Tom Rathman can stay. He just can't be the head coach. It's real simple. Jonathan is in San Francisco. How are you, Jonathan?
Good, Damon. I just want to make a Game of Thrones analogy again. You know, for me, Jed York is kind of like that prince breastfeeding Prince of the Vale, Robin Aaron.
Robin Aaron, yes.
Yeah, he's just disconnected like that guy, man. I mean, he went cheap on the coaching staff. He went cheap on the field trip. And now he's going cheap for the food, for the, you know, Super Bowl celebrities and dignitaries. I mean, come on, Jed. I mean, what can you do right?
I don't know. He's still Joffrey, though. I mean, come on. I mean, I know, like, the whole Denise York suckling at his mother angle happens if you go with John Aaron, but it's got to be Joffrey. Come on.
Speaking of, did you give us the premiere date?
No. April 24th.
Why so late?
April 24th is the next premiere of, was game, season six?
Season six, A Game of Thrones,
Season six, A Game of Thrones, April 24th. Looking very excited. They're looking forward to it. Also, Veep is going to premiere that night.
Oh, that's cool.
And the new Silicon Valley, which I don't watch.
Such a great show.
Don't watch it. I watch Veep, and then I'm done.
Oh, it's good. Silicon Valley is good.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Veep's good.
She was my go-to comedic draft pick.
Okay.
I loved her.
I love Lisa Mulane.
Oh, I love her. She's just so funny. She's funny in Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, she is.
She's funny in everything.
She's getting hotter, too.
Yes, she is.
Am I wrong there?
No.
She's getting hotter with age.
She's really funny. Did you see her in the your last bangable day skit on the Amy Schumer show?
I did not.
Oh, she's great. They come and celebrate her last sexable day. It's the last time. She just reaches that age. Like, you get to a certain age in Hollywood and you're no longer a sex object.
Gotcha.
You might as well be a lamp.
Right.
<You know>? So, very funny skit, very poignant, and she's great in it. She's just fantastic. I love her. She's so good in Veep. That I'll tell you what, you want to talk about like a wonderfully cast series?
And written. It's really well written.
Oh, it's great. This is Carpenter on 680. What's going on, Carp?
Hey, guys. Hey, David. Hey, Deanna. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
I just bought some tickets to the NFL Experience. I'm going on February 9th. It's at the Moscone Center.
Cool.
Got my in-laws are coming up from Palm Springs, and my wife and I. And I was just kind of wondering what to expect, if it was worth the $30 I paid over face value.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, you're gonna see a whole bunch of cool stuff. They've got memorabilia. They decorate the place. I mean, it feels like you're somewhere that's a big deal. There's nothing about the Super Bowl that doesn't feel like a huge size and scope thing. If you're coming with a desire to take part in all the activities and get all the autographs, you'll be disappointed because the lines become very, very long. And, you know, a player will sit down to autograph for a half an hour. And when that half an hour is up, you know, that guy gets up and leaves. So if you come with your kid looking to have a fun day with a child, I think you're going to have a really fun day. I really do. I mean, I don't have a kid, but if I did, I would want to bring the kid walking around, looking at all the cool displays and the banners and the jerseys and the fans and the cheerleaders. Like, it's cool. You'll have a good time.
Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. I just had to pay quite a bit over face value, but I was just hoping, you know, I wasn't getting that chip, you know, like York's doing for the dude. I don't know, the Niner fans.
So. No. I think that you're going to say to yourself, like, all right, I've never been to a huge Super Bowl event. That officially felt like a huge Super Bowl event. I think you'll be impressed.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, and you just got to be ready to go with the flow of the crowd. And it is a huge crowd.
Yeah, it'll be packed.
One of the big problems that they had in Phoenix last year is that Radio Row, was part of the fan experience. Radio Row is so big, it's broken into quadrants. Okay. And it takes up an entire floor of a convention center. And a guest has to walk in between the quadrants of stations to get to their next interview. Well, when in between the quadrants of stations, you have fans milling around, all of a sudden, a guy who's got an interview in this quadrant can't just leave the quadrant, get up, go to this next, you know, walk across the room and sit down and do his 4 o'clock interview because he had 700 autographs to sign in between there and there.
Oh, well, that might slow things down.
It really slowed things down. And it was kind of annoying, too, because you're sitting there doing an interview and you got somebody. I mean, it was Friday night, 4:30, end of Super Bowl week. So the place had really started clearing out in Phoenix. And it was me, Goulet, and Rod Woodson. And I'm doing an interview with Rod, talking to him about his Super Bowl experiences, his Super Bowl weeks as a player, now as a media member. You know, this year, obviously went back into coaching. But, I mean, I'm sitting there trying to do an interview with him, and there is this Steeler fan who is behind there's this, they put up the partition. But these are not soundproof partitions. And like I said, the whole thing was really slowing down by Friday night, and I'm doing this interview, and behind the interview the whole time you hear, Rod! Rod! Woody! Rod! Rod! Hey, Rod! 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 2-7! 2-7! Rod! The whole time.
That's kind of rude. He could have waited a few minutes till he was done.
These fans could give a damn about anything other than their moment.
I'm going to get there excited.
Rod! 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 I mean, he's got headphones on and he's talking directly to me. Like, Goulet had to get up and say something to the guy like, okay, well, after the 400th Rod, it might have dawned on you he's having a conversation that you're not involved in right now. And
yeah,
in the world of how you get an autograph, you're doing the opposite of that.
Yeah, this is not working.
You're doing the opposite of this guy's going to want to come and give me an autograph.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to fan shame if you want to produce during media week. You ready, Dan? I expect you don't understand. You're going to be more of a security guard than an actual producer that week.
I'll drop a fool.
You watch. That's awesome.
I'll pile drive. You don't get onto my set.
How was Super Bowl week? Well, it was great until Wednesday when Dan put this guy in a splatel and he was arrested. And
he went all WWE on the guy.
We haven't seen Dan since, but boy, he booked really well early in the week. So Thursday, Friday set, we'll bail him out on Saturday. We'll band-aid out on Saturday. By the way, try Chico's bail bonds for all your bailing purposes.
So is this going to be the same this year? Is a fan experience going to be a part of Media Row again? Or
all I can tell you is that it was such an issue. And here's the thing. You would think that the people who run Radio Row would take into account what people in radio had to say. We just don't matter. They gotcha. They don't care. We might as well be 49er fans.
Oh, okay.
What we say, what we ask for, what our wishes are, aren't even factored by the people who are running this thing.
Gotcha.
They're going to do it their way. But there was so much complaining from NFL Network, ESPN, Fox, CB, all the major networks were having a major guest screw up. And that's the kind of pressure you need to put on the committee to change anything.
Right. Okay.
So when the hoi polloi complain about something, it's not heard. When the A-plus crowd, the top shelf crowd doesn't like it, all of a sudden things start changing. So we're really hoping that there is some sort of demarcation line between the fan experience and actual Radio Row. I know, like, people hear Radio Row and you think, well, it's just all these tables in one big row. No, it's actually the entire floor of a convention center with several large quadrants of radio stations all over the place, and usually in the middle is NFL Network.
Wow. Cool.
It is cool. I'm excited that you get to see it this year.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
It's cool. It's big. I mean, that's just it makes everything else seem like a rinky-dink backyard barbecue. Have we got a fight in a college game? We got Cincinnati and SMU, and we got guys like getting pulled apart on the baseline. Let me tell you, nobody's There's not a college basketball team in the nation who will pull the thuggish, ruggish bone lever as fast as the Cincinnati Bearcats. Don't mess with Cincinnati. And Bob Huggins is gone. This is no longer Bob Huggins and his Cosby sweater's fault. 888-957-9570 is the number. We are going to come back with Tom Verducci, one of the best baseball writers out there. We had ourselves a Hall of Fame vote. Still no love for Bonds and Clemens. He'll never vote for Bonds or Clemens. We'll ask him why next on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show. With so much talk about Major League Baseball, I thought we'd bring in one of the best to talk about this Hall of Fame vote and a couple of other things. Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated, one of the most respected writers and voices covering the grand old game. We're thrilled to have you on the show, Tom. Thanks very much for your time. How are you?
I am doing well, kind of recovering after all the Hall of Fame talk. It's hard work.
You know, it really is. Let's just jump right into it. Your vote this year, and you're one of those guys who publishes your vote, Griffey, Piazza, Bagwell, Hoffman, Kent, McGriff, Moose, Rock Reigns, and Schilling. Which one of those names surprised you by not making it in?
I wasn't surprised. My expectation going in was that it was Griffey and Piazza. I was actually surprised that Tim Raines moved as much as he did. I think Raines and Bagwell look like they're in next year, based on history, because they're right where Mike Piazza was last year, about 69-70%. And since the current rules are put in place, the last 17 guys who got to that spot with time left on the ballot, 16 of them all went in the next year. The only exception was Jim Bunning. He actually went in by the Veterans Committee later. So once you get into that territory, 70%, those last 5%, generally you pick it up the next year. So I'm already looking forward to next year when it looks like two guys I've been voting for, Bagwell and Raines, get in.
Tell me about the internal or off-the-record lobbying for guys that are close. Like, do you get calls from agents or representatives? Have you ever gotten a call from a player himself arguing one way or the other whether a player himself should be or another player should or shouldn't be in the Hall?
Well, yeah, it's happened. I can't say it happened this year. I remember in the past there was someone working on behalf of Tony Perez that would be sending out emails or packets, if you will, of information. I remember Ryan Sandberg. I didn't vote for him, and I forget which club he was with at the time. He gave me an earful the next spring training when he saw me. It's really hard to try to tell people. Like,
all right, I grew up a Cubs fan. Why were you reluctant on Sandberg?
I just didn't think the overall numbers were there. He was, to me, a classic borderline guy. I have no problem with him being the Hall of Fame, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, I tend to be a little strict on these things. I did have 9 on the ballot this year, but you know, it's really tough to tell guys who are really, really good players that you just don't think they're in that, you know, 1% of the 1% of all time.
Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated here on 95.7 The Game. When it comes to the actual procedure of the vote, the thing that I like the least is this number of 10. Why have an arbitrary number of 10 as a maximum? I mean, if there were 11 bona fide Hall of Fame caliber players, all 11 should be able to be voted for. And I think that just having an arbitrary number attached to it creates and emboldens a lot of BBWA writers to tinker with their vote rather than vote their actual conscience.
Yeah, I can understand that point. In fact, I was on a committee from the baseball writers who approached the Hall of Fame last year to say, hey, can we at least bump this thing up to 12? And my argument has been that, you know, with expansion, we have a lot, the universe of players is a lot bigger. And, you know, they just came back and said they think the system works. They like the way it's working. You know, on average, over the course of history, it's been between 1 and 2 on average per year that the writers have voted in. So someone who wants to keep status quo would say, well, wait a second. Why do you want to vote for more than 10 when over the course of history, dating 1936, we're only putting in 1 or 2 a year? I guess that would be the argument that you would get back. What's funny, though, is I went back and I checked from 68 to 2002, big spread of history, when over time you have some of these holdover candidates like a Raines or a Bagwell or guys who go in by the Veterans Committee. So over time, on each year, you have an average of 10 Hall of Famers on every ballot. Now, only one or two on average get voted in by the Raiders that particular year.
Right.
But years from now, you're going to look back on this ballot today and see that, my goodness, we had 10 Hall of Famers on the ballot in 2016.
Who are the three clowns who didn't vote for Griffey?
I don't know. They have not been hunted down and identified with pitchforks and torches yet, but I'm sure that's on the way.
You know, my biggest problem with them, Tom, is that they didn't vote because, well, Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth didn't get unanimous. So basically, they're saying, because someone else made a terrible mistake, I'm going to voluntarily make a stupid mistake as well.
Yeah, you may be right about that. The fact is, right now, we just don't know. There's some speculation that because some people were limited to 10 and you wanted to vote for more than 10, you would say, well, wait a second, I know Junior Griffey's getting in, so
right.
He doesn't really need my vote. Alan Trammell needs my vote more. I'm going to put him on the ballot and have Griffey off. We just don't know. It gets a lot of attention. I'm not saying I'm endorsing it when people leave off obvious Hall of Famers, but I will say when you have 440 people voting, have three outliers that really don't affect the outcome, it's kind of meaningless. I understand it doesn't look good for all writers when these things happen. I'm certainly not dismissing it in hand, but the good thing is it didn't affect the outcome.
Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated, of course, the watershed story that you penned in 2002 about Ken Caminiti and his steroid use was, I think, the first real look through the window of the reality that baseball was facing, and you did an amazing job with that. And, you know, obviously he said this is a widespread thing. This is not a small clique. This is not a corner of the clubhouse. It's the clubhouse that's pretty much on steroids. I'm guessing you believed him, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're talking about someone who was at ground level when it came to usage that, let's face it, guys do for obvious reasons surreptitiously. So it's hard to know exactly, you know, what the extent of it is. If you ask me, you know, how many power hitting shortstops there are in baseball, it's pretty easy to count them. But to try to guess how many people were using steroids at the time, you know, who knew? So you have to go to people who are involved in that culture, and his guess was about half. I don't really to this day have reason to doubt him. But I can tell you this, when I get my Hall of Fame ballot, I still think about those days, because we now have people voting in the Hall of Fame who did not cover the steroid era, which to me tells me how old I am. But, you know, guys who are covering voting who never really lived it. And I say lived it, I'll go back to the year before. The genesis of that story is I had clean players coming up to me in 2001 just completely complaining. Hey, listen, this game is unfair. For me to compete now, I have to break federal law and put drugs in my body with needles. I don't want to do that, but if I don't do it, I'm at a competitive disadvantage. And it went from a few outliers and renegades to so many people using that the clean players really were disadvantaged. So when I get my ballot, I think about the clean players and the people who lost jobs, lost money, and were disadvantaged because other guys cheated to get a competitive advantage.
Tom, will we ever see Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens on your ballot?
No. I mean, my position is, if it's obvious that there was steroid use, it doesn't matter if it occurred in your first year or 20th year in the big leagues. There's no way I can endorse that behavior because, again, this was something that was done surreptitiously. It was something that was against law. It's something that, to this day, players do not admit they did it. The reason they do not admit they did it, because why? Because it immediately makes what they accomplished inauthentic. And what drives me nuts is people out there who accuse me or other people saying, oh, who appointed you the morality police? This is not about morality. This is about the basic fundamental of sports, and that's fair play.
I completely agree with the logic, but I also think the logic of, hey, we got to deal with the sport not in the vacuum we wish it were in, but in the actual vacuum it's being played in. And if steroids were the norm, or at least part of the norm, I just think that Bonds and Clemens, who are two of the greatest baseball players I've ever seen, are still being unjustly propped up as the faces of an issue when really they're just two faces in a picture of 1,000 guys.
Well, you could say that they were drum majors in the parade. That's
sure.
The steroid era was. I mean, these people just didn't dabble in what happened. I mean, the extensive work that Mark Fanawada and Lance Williams did in Game of Shadows, it's the biggest doping history of any baseball player we've ever seen. And it just tore up the record book. It took that era and brought it completely apart from the rest of Major League history. You can't connect baseball history because of that one era. And I understand people feel differently, but it's funny looking back on it, because when I wrote the Caminiti story, you know, people accused him, and me to a lesser extent, of exaggerating the issue. Oh, you're just looking for attention. You're looking for, you know, you're exaggerating the issue to get attention on steroids in baseball. And now the same people look back and say, well, everybody was doing it, so you should just excuse these guys. I'm telling you, not everybody was doing it, and it was the biggest advantage that people had in the game was to use drugs.
Tom Verducci, a Twitterless Tom Verducci, by the way. I'm guessing Sports Illustrated's asked you at least, like, more than once to join Twitter. You're holding out, like, yeah, you're holding out on that like Bonds. Is Twitter the steroids era? You just, you don't want any part of it?
Yeah, they've asked me more than once. So, so far they haven't broke me down yet, but they keep trying.
It's interesting. I mean, I almost, it's to the point where, like, I respect it. I hope you never join Twitter at this point. I'm like, I'm rooting for you at this point.
You're not the only one who has said that, by the way.
I mean, I couldn't imagine doing my job without it. So just, like, I'm impressed that you continue to be a leader in your field when you are avoiding where everybody's looking. It shows how good you are. How about this, Tom? Do you ever think you'd be covering the Cleveland Browns?
No, I didn't. It's I think it's a great compliment to baseball. And I know it's the Browns. It's not exactly, you know, the New England Patriots in the NFL. But for the NFL team to go to Major League Baseball and take one of their top analysts and economists and Paul D. Podesta, it's a credit to baseball, because I think baseball is ahead of the NFL when it comes to using analytics. I mean, every business in the world now is using big data. And Paul has been at the forefront, Major League Baseball, for now, you know, really 2 decades. So, you know, I give them credit, by the way. You know, I know the Browns, and they deserve a lot of criticism based on, you know, what they've done the last few years. But, you know, it's one, the smart person is really not the person who tells you what he knows. He tells you what he doesn't know. And I think Jimmy Haslam went out there over the course of the last year, and he wanted to learn things about how to run a successful organization. And he spent a whole year visiting the Dodgers, the Indians, the Cardinals, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and asking these guys, what is it about your front office, about your processes and policies that makes a winning organization? And I give him credit, because this was a whole year-long search, and he wound up with Paul D. Podesta, which I think he's a really good hire. He's definitely just a really smart guy. So adding intellect, for sure, the Browns have that. I don't think he's going to go in there and tell them what offense to use and install the defense. But I think for an organization that's had a lot of flowchart issues, if you will, in how that management team is put together and run, he will definitely help with that.
Wouldn't it be really funny if he just wrote down on a post-it note, slid it across the table, and flipped it over, and it just says, keep Manziel out of Vegas? And that's his.
That's a start.
Yeah. How many times did you have to use your backspace because you were writing about D. Podesta in Cleveland? How many times did you write Indians by accident?
It's funny you said that, because it did cross my mind, because Paul actually came through there as
well.
Yeah, you guys obviously know him from the Bay Area from his days with Oakland.
Sure.
And, you know, it's interesting. I'm not even sure yet if, listen, Paul lives with, he's got a pretty big family, lives in the San Diego area. I'm not even sure he's going to move to Cleveland. And I know all the people are in San Diego right now are saying, well, why would you? But, you know, in these days, I guess, I know what the Mets hired him. He was able to remain at home in San Diego. He wasn't in New York all that much. It's a pretty big job in Cleveland, though. I'm not sure whether maybe he just goes and leaves his family. I don't know. But he's made himself into a West Coast guy.
I've enjoyed this conversation tremendously. Let's wrap up with this. And Rob Manfred, is he the right commissioner to take this old-fashioned sport and fit it into the modern world we're now all living in?
He is, and I'll tell you, you may not see much so far. It's only been a year. I mean, the pace of play definitely picked up. I think they got a little lax with it in the second half of the season. But he is definitely aware of making this game faster and more attractive to a younger generation. And I think you'll see other things in the course of this season that you will say, wow, this game really is moving forward. I really believe that. Now, it'll be interesting. His real test is going to become, well, he's got two tests. He's got one on these domestic violence incidents that he has to deal with Jose Reyes, Aroldis Chapman. Let's see, because this is a new policy, and he really hasn't had to swing a hammer yet. So we'll see what he does there. But really, I'm looking forward to or seeing how he reacts with the new negotiations for the CBA. Those should be starting in another month or so. It runs out at the end of this season. You have Tony Clark, who's new to the Players Association, negotiating one for the first time on his end. And Rob Manfred, who's been it before as Bud Selig's point guy, but first time as commissioner. Let's see how it works out. But my gut feeling is there's too much money in this game for either side to really push this thing to a work stoppage.
Two best reasons to subscribe to Sports Illustrated still to this day: the swimsuit issue and the promise of maybe Kathy Ireland popping up again, and Tom Verducci. Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Always good to have Tom Verducci. An opinion I don't agree with. I mean, I'm voting for Bonds. I'm voting for Clemens. But I at least appreciate his consistency on the issue. Damon, the guy is an ace. Great interview, says one person. Next guy, very next text. What a sanctimonious whiner. That means it's a good guest. Some people like him, some people hate him. I think there's a lot to think about, no matter what he said. When we come on back, we'll give you the very latest from the insider buzz. According to the Bleacher Report, there are two teams that look like they are the front runners to move to L.A. Guess what? The Raiders aren't among them. Could be good news. We'll have it for you next.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Guy here, text line from the Nickel Dime, says, Damon, don't get me too excited. I'll start screaming in my work van like a 12-year-old girl about the Raiders. All right, well, just a little tip. Never use the words van and 12-year-old girl in the same sentence. Not a good idea. Not a good look.
Good advice.
Thank you. Jason Cole has just filed a video report on Bleacher Report saying that there is momentum growing for the Rams and the Chargers to partner in Inglewood in Stan Kroenke Stadium. And that is what he is hearing is the most likely scenario for a move to Los Angeles. So why not the Raiders? Well, he says that there is still a palpable anti-Raiders contingent among owners. And before you just assume, well, it must still be over Al Davis's sour grapes and suing the league and winning that lawsuit. And, you know, a lot of owners didn't like Al for stepping out of line and doing his own thing, playing to his own band. That's probably not it. I don't think that they're holding the sins of the father against the son. I think they're holding the ability of the son against the son.
Sure.
Look, Los Angeles isn't just a prize. It's a gold mine. I don't think the NFL trusts the Raiders to be the best team to get as much gold as possible out of the gold mine. Bad for image, bad for business, very little acumen in that front office as far as business savvy. You know, I heard, you know, once again, let me debunk the myth that Amy Trask was great at what she did. She wasn't. Not even close. If that was Bob Trask, she wouldn't be in demand for interviews. Andy Trask is not heralded as some hero. Amy is. Raiders are bad for business. That's not my opinion. That could be the NFL's. It's the NFL's opinion. So, like I've said, and I promise you I'm going to be consistent on this, good. Good. Whatever keeps the Raiders in Oakland is what I want to happen. That's it. That's what I want. That's what you want. How we get what we want doesn't even matter. Let's not apply any style points to this. So that's the news. Strong growing momentum for the Rams and Chargers. And let me tell you what I'd love to do. I would love to be either at the meeting or on the phone where Dean Spanos calls Mark Davis and was like, hey, you know how I said we were going to partner up? Nope. How awkward is that going to be?
Yeah.
If that happens, first of all, Mark Davis is going to feel like the fat girl in high school that no one's going to ask to the prom. Like,
And the parents will be encouraging, like, oh, well, you, like, a group of your friends should go. No, it's never a good alternate. It's not. If a boy didn't ask you to the prom, or let me make this 2015 version. 16, 2016 yeah. version. Thank you, Elena. Button Vixen's like, 16. Thank you. If you go to a prom with someone that you've got absolutely no chance of doing anything with or to, you've done it wrong. You can't, that is the moment in high school where it's supposed to be like, this is not about friends. This is about couples. This is about something might happen.
Yeah, it's a date. It's a big date.
It's a big date. It is the date that every single dad circles on his mental calendar the day his daughter's born. Oh, no. It's not the junior prom you're worried about. It's the senior that invites your sophomore daughter to the senior prom.
Yep.
Oh, look at your hand went right up.
No, totally.
Was that you? Were you dating above your weight class there for a little bit?
I did. Yep. Sophomore, junior, senior. All 3 years. Yep.
Did you have fun at the senior prom when you were a sophomore?
Yep.
Yeah, I bet you did.
It was all clean and happy and fun. But you're right. It is a day that dads circle and pay attention to. You never want to be the odd one out for senior prom, unfortunately.
No, you don't.
I hope that doesn't happen to any kids. That's not fun.
The NFL is going to throw a big Los Angeles prom. Mark Davis thought he was going to be the prom queen, and he's going to get the bucket of blood carry treatment.
Ugh. But worst case scenario is the Raiders stay. So, yay, Oakland.
Yay, exactly. Yay, yeah, Oakland. Yes. I'm glad that the NFL still holds gobs of bad feelings towards the Raiders, if that equals Oakland Raiders.
Right.
Like, I want to personally thank Mark Davis's inability to do business for saving the Raiders in Oakland. Because that's what this is. This is just way too important of a moment to be given to somebody who doesn't know how to capitalize on big moments.
Right. It's too bad.
No, it's not. It's great.
No, it's great. You're right. It is great.
It's super
from a business standpoint, though, it's not good.
Super duper. So that is the latest from Jason Cole, Bleacher Report, momentum building for Rams and Chargers to join forces in Inglewood, not necessarily the Raiders and the Chargers in Carson. So there it is. We got more on that and some of the details from the sexy L.A. proposal of that cronky Inglewood Stadium and why it's just better than the Carson proposal. Denard Span. Damon, can we talk about Denard Span? Well, yeah, they signed him to a $31 million three-year deal today. And to really talk about it with great, vivid detail, Giant General Manager Bobby Evans is going to be joining us tomorrow live at 5 o'clock. So we will have all your Denard Span information tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Right now, I think it's a good signing. I'm happy with the Giants offseason. They really went out and filled holes that they had. And that's what you need to do with free agency. Plug those holes. You know who's plugging a big hole for the Warriors now that he's healthy? Harrison Barnes, and he joins me next.
The Damon Bruce Show. 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.